afternoon, and welcome to the Henry Raine Show here on WWPR 1490 AM, heard every Saturday, 12.05 p.m. until approximately 1 o'clock or a little bit later if we roll over and keep things going here, thanks to the generosity of the management at WWPR. This week on your Bitcoin blockchain cryptocurrency review, Goldman Sachs considers cryptocurrency trading for clients, Mark Cuban speaks out, and BlackRock CEO Larry Fink says he is a believer in cryptocurrency. There's a possible reversal in China's cryptocurrency exchange ban. And where's the volume, the trading volume? Plus, did Floyd Money Mayweather score an ICO knockout, the one that, you know, we made fun of mocking a few weeks back? Plus, we're going to have a special guest in the studio, TradingView.com's Goldbug One, well over 5,000 followers and active commentary all the time on the cryptocurrency markets. Before we go to our panel, I want to remind you that you can find us on almost any of your favorite podcast sites, starting with the flagship podcast site with the most information, the Podomatic.com, HenryRaineShow.podomatic.com, but you can also find us on SoundCloud and also on Stitcher.com. And somehow we're on iTunes, but I'm having trouble pulling that up personally. So if you have trouble, we're going to have that resolved hopefully by next week. And then also by next week, we've been in discussions with yours.org to be on that platform also, and that will allow us to have a little bit of compensation and a little bit of help staying on the air. And we certainly need that. But let's not waste any more time and get into our panel. That's right, the contrarian of the panel, all you Augustinians out there, it's Augie. Good afternoon, Augie.
I'm in the Netherlands. I'm in the nowhere lands. It's all safe. It's all secure, and China's going to make it that way.
Now, I was told by the management that they had checked all these mics this week, but we're going to see if Leonard has the same effect on that. Go ahead and pull the condom off the mic. That's it. Just rip the condom off.
Feels so good.
Okay, let's try and see how this works for Leonard. Leonard Lopen, Chief Technical Officer of Byte Federal, placing Bitcoin ATMs all around the state of Florida and beyond. Leonard, I hate to ask this, how do you sound today?
Let's find out. Oh, similar.
All right. And Alex and I had a conversation off the air about some things in this studio, and he is getting reinforced on that conversation right now. And let me not waste any more time in getting Alex into here. And good afternoon, Alex.
Welcome, everybody. Just growing with the currency.
Yeah, Alex is sounding pretty good there today. I think we're going to wind up with a four-way on the red mic over there in a moment. Maybe somebody will come over here and I'll share this mic, too. And then a great way to introduce a brand new guest and hopefully returning guest in the future here, and that would be
Goldbug. Goldbug. Central banks covering up the government.
And that would be Goldbug One, a.k.a. Andrew, here in the studio from TradingView.com. Good afternoon, Andrew, a.k.a. Goldbug, or vice versa.
Good afternoon, Henry. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, thank you. I hope it remains that way for the rest of the hour. Let me, before we get into the news here, tell us, first of all, what TradingView.com is if people haven't been there. Because I was told by Alex about it, and then I go, and I see there's a whole world there online. How did you get involved?
Well, TradingView.com is a charts and graphing software that is used pretty much throughout the crypto space because the exchanges do not have enough power to chart and do the graphics that you need to do in order to spot trends, do analysis, and, you know, pick your entry and exit points.
And so obviously you came to that with some background knowledge. Did you just dive into cryptocurrency trading, or did you start come from a stock market background?
I came from a stock market background mainly, and, you know, it didn't take long. As soon as I saw that chart, I was like, I have to be in this. I think Ed Sakota said, if you can see the trend from 10 feet away, that's the way you need to be investing.
Now, which chart are you talking about?
The Bitcoin chart.
Okay. Now, and if people who listen to the show may be familiar with it, or they may be just stumbling on the show for the first time, or maybe they never looked at the chart before, you got a few years there where it's just a slow, steady rise, maybe for a slope, maybe a slope of 10 degrees or 15-degree incline, and then something happened. What did you see?
Well, you go through phases in the market, and that's the first phase was the first big bump in 2013 when it went to around $1,200. That was a very what they call the everybody has to jump down the boat. Well, what ends up happening is there's always a pullback, and the currency obviously pulled back, and it went through a long, long pullback period where it reached 200. This is when a lot of the larger investors come in, smart money starts coming in, but they come in at a small time. But then again, it gains some immediate attention, people jump on board, and you have that parabolic surge to the top, which we had. And if anybody is interested in Elliott waves, that's how it works.
Yeah, explaining graphics on the radio is a little bit of a challenge. But now, as I was playing with some of the technical stuff here, so you did come from a stock market background?
Yes, sir.
Okay, how many years in that?
Oh, gosh, I remember when I was a kid, I'd sit there at the dinner table, and that's when we had to pull the stock prices off the newspaper and put them in a little book.
I remember newspapers.
What are Elliott waves?
You, Augie, you're just going to have to share that mic over here. And, Leonard, I'm going to apologize to the audience as the boom makes its noise here. You're going to be in here,
what
too.
What are Elliott waves?
Did I understand you correctly on that?
Yeah, Elliott wave is a typical market cycle. So markets run in cycles, and if you go through the history of any cycle, going back to what Jamie Dimon mentioned with the tulip mania, all the way to the recent gold cycle, oil cycles, they all go through cycles. And Elliott wave back in the 30s, he came up with the Elliott wave method. Not to get into it overall, but you have 5 impulse cycles, which is the buying spree, and then you always have a corrective cycle, which brings it back to the mean.
Okay.
So when Jamie Dimon bought into Bitcoin, or condemned it and then bought into it at the same time, what was he doing?
Well, that's what we call market manipulation. But, that may not have been J.P. Morgan themselves. You know, they have clients all over the world that are investing in that.
That's what we said when we corrected the original story that was out there 2 weeks ago when we corrected it last week. But one of the things I want to get into about manipulation is trading volume. We'll get to that in just a moment. But I'm going to let Leonard try and get in here, too. Give us a quick update before we dive into trading volume and some of these other things. What's happening with Bite Federal and the ATMs around here? I know you just added Ethereum, right? Because that's going to speak to the volume we're talking about.
Yes, that's correct. We added Ethereum, and we also got a new location in Gainesville. And there's more locations coming in Tallahassee and West Palm Beach, actually, as we speak.
All right. It's sprawling across the state. Yeah. Blowing through like a hurricane with planning your ATMs and mixing metaphors on the radio like crazy. Well, Ethereum is interesting because about 2 weeks ago there was a story, and we spent quite a bit of time on it here on the radio, and that was that there was what they called an Ethereum mixer. And according to the people that studied this, they said two-thirds of the volume in Ethereum was just the same traders under different guises going from one exchange to another and basically churning that same Ethereum over and over again. So I would say, as I've looked over the last several weeks, now there's sometimes that Ethereum volume has gotten as much as $1 billion in a day, but consistently it was in the 500 million, maybe 600, maybe down to 400, basically about two-thirds of whatever you saw going on with Bitcoin, unless there was news of the day that was moving Ethereum in particular. Now, for the last week plus, coincidentally when the story seemed to have come out, all of a sudden there's a drop in Ethereum volume, but there's also a drop in a lot of the other cryptocurrency volume, especially Litecoin too, which we may get into. So what I've been seeing now is volumes in the $100 million range on Ethereum, which is, when you're talking about a drop of two-thirds, much less a drop from about a month ago of 80%, something's going on. What's your observation of it?
Well, overall, just as an overall market perspective, we're seeing a correction in the market overall. You know, a lot of these coins were run up 3, 4, 12,000%. That's an extreme run. There's a lot of emotions there, and a lot of people bought really high. That's just how it works. You had the pullback, people get scared, and you see how everything falls out. Well, now you're in a time where the market's trying to find direction. It comes down to supply and demand. I may have a lot of Ethereum, but if I don't want to sell it, you have to pay more for to buy it. You want to buy Ethereum, but you don't want to pay where I'm pricing my Ethereum at. So you see the low volume and the price just kind of fluctuates around there, and it's waiting for something to crack. And that's what we need to see in the market, something to move the market in one direction or the other.
Right. And later in the show, we'll be looking at some of the news story. But, Leonard, what do you make of the story, though, that there was an Ethereum mixer, and it may or may not still be going on? How easy would it be for a few hands that have a lot of Ethereum to make that happen? Talk about the mechanism a little bit, if you will.
Well, I think one thing we have to keep in mind is Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, generally speaking, is programmable money. So there's a lot of automated trading going on, a lot of automated machine processes moving money back and forth on a daily basis. And we did also have China, obviously, with the ban scaring a lot of people and making it harder maybe for Chinese citizens to move their money around or into cryptocurrency. So that may have impacted volumes as well.
One of the things that you could see immediately after some of the news about the ICO bans in China and then the closing down of the exchanges, which you have some big news on that we'll get to in just a few minutes, the possible reversal of that decision and the unintended consequences of China's decision. But, of course, you see the big rush right away. The markets plunge. Everybody's trying to get out before it hits a bottom below where they can get out. And then you watch it unwind. It's been, about 5-6 weeks now that this has been going on. So your first 3 weeks, there pretty much was only downward movement. Then you get a few attempts to rally, it seems like. And at the same time, this, especially even Bitcoin, the volume's gone down significantly. I'm wondering if there's still money waiting to unwind there or not. And anybody can answer this question. Have we seen the unwinding of these positions, or is it just we had the first wave, or not to borrow a term from Goldbug over there, but the first wave of the big volume, and now people are more careful and are unwinding at a very slow pace, and how long can that go? Who would like to take that? Well, Goldbug.
That's a great question. I'm not a big news guy. And I don't follow the news, and you can see it in my articles that I write. News has very little effect on the market, in my opinion. However, news is a catalyst for maybe what will happen. We've heard nothing but bad news from China, but after that news came out, Korea sanctioned ICOs and started. And Bitcoin still climbed up.
In a positive way.
In a positive way. But I even think the news from China...
License, I guess, is the word we're looking for.
That's correct. But I even think the news from China was important. China does not want to be left behind in this critical change that's ongoing in barter and trade and financial systems. China wants to be a leader. What do leaders do? They regulate. They come in and set rules and regulations, and that gives the space validity. It gives it legitimacy, and that allows the average investor to know, hey, I'm investing in something that's safe. So I think it was a good thing for China.
Well, thanks to Goldbug for that segue right into the news.
Hey, I've got news for you.
It Chinese government will likely resume cryptocurrency trading in the upcoming months with necessary Know Your Customer, KYC, and anti-money laundering, AML, systems in place. This is courtesy of CryptoCoin News, but the story has been carried other way. Earlier this week, Xinhua, the state-owned news publication of China, revealed that the Chinese government is concerned with the criminal activities surrounding cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin that led to these decisions. Also, I'm sure the attempt of a centrally controlled government to get control, essentially, of a big pile of money. Last month, the Chinese government, the People's Bank of China, and local financial regulators imposed a nationwide ban on cryptocurrency exchanges. Consequently, the price of Bitcoin fell to $3,000 and the cryptocurrency market endured a major correction. Since then, the global cryptocurrency exchange market has restructured as the majority of trading volume from China moved to neighboring markets, Japan, South Korea. As we've said, Japanese government officially authorized 11 cryptocurrency exchanges in the same month, providing an efficient and well-regulated ecosystem for the Chinese traders. And the Bitcoin price has recovered and been hanging around the $4,000 mark. But the Chinese government ban on cryptocurrency led to increasing trade volumes over-the-counter markets and peer-to-peer trading on platforms such as local bitcoins. That's the name of it, local bitcoins. Previously, when Chinese cryptocurrency trading platforms such as BTCC, OKCoin, Huobi, were around, the overwhelming trades were on there. Now they've moved into these secondary ways of trading, and probably this is a good idea for to ask Leonard to explain this. What is the difference between trading on an exchange and trading peer-to-peer?
Well, I think the main difference is you are trading with another person, another bank. You have to share private information about your bank accounts, possibly, and maybe even meet somewhere, which for many people is not really a safe option. So they're a little bit more of a hassle than actually going through an exchange, as long as the exchange is kind of well-respected and trustworthy.
Well, but what do? You're not in my city. You're somewhere else in China or in the U.S., and I want to send you the Bitcoin. How do I do it?
Yeah, no, so sending the Bitcoin will be very easy. The trickier part is exchanging the fiat, right? So if I want your currency, your Russian currency or some other, wherever you are. But usually local bitcoins is also local. It is in the country itself. I think most people actually, when they do these peer-to-peer transactions, they do it in the banking system of their own nation. So you'd be just exchanging banking information and wait for the money to arrive in your bank account and then send the Bitcoin.
So on the other hand, if for what they nominally say they're trying to do is prevent criminal activity, if the exchange is for the criminal activity as opposed for the fiat currency, then you don't have that problem, right?
See, one of the big problems why local bitcoins is even, for instance, in Florida, a big problem, the state considers if you start selling Bitcoin to people as a business, as a side business, you actually fall under regulations in the state of Florida. You can't actually do it. We had arrests in Miami because of that. Someone just got a 5-year prison sentence in, I think, Minnesota or something. So that's actually quite tricky.
Right, but the people that they're trying to take care of are already criminals. So if they're involved in criminal activity in China, whether it be drugs or gambling or whatever it is, if they're providing that service, in exchange, they can receive the Bitcoin and provide the contraband to them, right?
Yes, but of course, how would you distinguish between who's the criminal and who's not?
I think you did step into it, Henry, on that one. People have claimed that they can make money for other people, and they're right in Florida already. So the regulations that you cited are what the state attorney or the state's attorney will decide to come against you for if they can find
right,
a
but
way
I'm not
to
talking
it.
About Florida. I'm talking about China and what the effect
well,
of
we're
the,
talking to Florida right now.
No, we changed the subject, but I was staying on China. So
China is going to regulate one way or the other. No
but the point being is that the people that they were trying to regulate, the criminals, this doesn't hurt them. It hurts the people that Leonard's talking about that were just simply trying to trade currency and fiat.
Henry, I think you're wishing on the moon a little bit. We had arguments over the phone with some of the other callers, and the argument was the libertarians want free access to do anything you choose. The criminals can be part of it or not part of it, and assuming criminality is what the washing of money points to, so you're going to have a legislative thing that goes against
well,
that.
We're digressing
that.
Into Florida. I want to stay on China.
I'm not talking about Florida. I am talking universally.
Okay. Well, anyway, I want to get back to China. So what the point is that they have unintended consequences by this ban. And now it looks as though they're going to reverse themselves as probably within the next few months, as it continues in the article towards the conclusion. The ban did not stop the Chinese investors from buying cryptocurrency. In the last few weeks, we've seen a lot of mainland customers opening up on Tidebit. So they're moving it into Hong Kong or Singapore or places like that. Meanwhile, the peer-to-peer, maybe it's not for criminal. Maybe it's just the people that are trying to do honest trades with each other. But I have my doubts about that.
Well, I think the whole China thing was kind of overblown. It was originally ICOs that they were after. And that's if Henry wanted to come up with the Henry coin and go after people that don't understand and get them to send them their money. And you're ripping them off. That's what China was worried about, and that's what China went after. They weren't trying to ban Bitcoin. They weren't trying to ban the main coins. They were trying to ban those. But the exchanges that got hit, I think OKCoin and Hubei, were allowed to operate to the end of October so that they could give the new administration coming into the Chinese government time to get things together and time to get a plan together to allow the people to exchange. They're not stopping cryptocurrencies. I don't think they want to. I think there's too much money. Think of these billionaires that are investing into it over in China. You think they're just going to walk away from that? Absolutely not. They have the power in China just like the United States.
Well, the rumors were reported before the actual announcements anyway.
That's
so
right.
People that had the knowledge could have already acted on this anyway. So it takes us back to the point, has it unwound yet or not? And we've got to wait and see. All right.
I'm not so sure. I think we still got a little bit further down to go.
Okay. Before we leave the volume.
How further down do you speculate?
I would say at least Bitcoin at 3,500, but I've seen charts and actually mine. Of course, I'm going to get a lot of paper thrown at me, but 2,200 is our target.
For a correction?
For a correction, that's correct. And that comes off the 2013 cycle. From 2013, we went from 200 to 230 to 5,000. Normally, markets correct 0.618 or 61% of the total movement. So 2,200 is a target. I know it seems crazy. I know people go, that's nuts. But that's how markets work. And I could show you chart after chart after chart of people who thought it didn't work for silver, didn't think it worked for gold. And I could pull those charts up and you'd go, which one's Bitcoin? And you would not know.
More importantly, though, is the two-thirds, 60-what percent you said, is that a bounce point or is that a new plateau?
That's what happens is it reverts back to the main trend. And the main trend is reverting back to the mean. So there's a long trend line. We revert up parabolic from that trend line, and at some point we come back to that trend line, and we have to have that in order for new money to come in. Who's buying at 5,000 right now? Are you buying? No. A lot of people aren't. That's why you're seeing low volume, but you have people that are saying, you know what, I bought at 4,800. I'm not selling because I hear it's going to 6,000. So you have this low market volume where people don't want to buy, people don't want to sell. So until something breaks, and we could move higher. I want to make that very clear. There is a path to 10,000 from here. But at some point, the market's going to correct, whether it's here or the next level up. And it'll always revert back to that mean. And until we do that, large money's not going to come in.
Well, something that might have an effect on that could be this.
Goldman Sachs Group Inc.is considering launching a business to help clients trade Bitcoin and other digital currencies, Bloomberg reports, citing an unnamed person briefed on the plan. The New York-based bank is in talks with cryptocurrency experts, but hasn't yet formulated a business plan, a timetable for implementation, or made any Bitcoin-related investments, the report said. In response to...
Alright, so one thing that could happen is the major financial players around the world, and particularly Wall Street, could decide that this is an asset class that their customers need to be involved in. Leonard, you know, you really are directly affected by this more than the traders because it's your livelihood. And as Lee explained it to us, your CEO of Bike Federal, you have to maintain an inventory. This isn't you don't just go out on exchange, grab it for the customer, and then
broker it like Goldman Sachs would or somebody. You're actually making the market in it.
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, we are a part trading desk, if you think about it. So the volatility influences and hits us directly. One thing I wanted to add to Goldbach, I think he is correct with his 2200. Also on the logarithmic chart, if you look on this eight-year steady trend line up, if you kind of look at that, 2200 is kind of where it is the worst-case scenario, where it would revert back to the mean trend line, which is interesting. And again, it doesn't have to fall that far. You know, it could just squeeze itself further up, but that's definitely some low point I could see, too, as a worst-case scenario. And one other thing which I found interesting, when the Chinese tried to ban, just like the Russians did in 2014, and obviously at this point even thinking of making it legal, one interesting thing in that document that made those exchanges shut down was the Chinese saying, like, oh, we realize this is threatening our government, and we should probably come up with our own coin, China coin. That was really fascinating to read this from an official standpoint.
Henry, I think stability is what's being sought here by the governments, and if everybody's out there doing their thing, it's like Germany in 1929. If you know what happened in Germany, every city in Germany at the time was printing their own currency, and the Deutschmark was worthless.
Dubai has made their own currency for their government. They are using that. I have seen that. So they are taking a step in. You know, the governments are using this now.
Well, on the other side of the break, we're going to get into some more of the opinions being offered by CEOs of BlackRock, by billionaire Mark Cuban, and others to see which direction this is going. So the question is, are we going back to the trend line of that first inflection, I guess you're saying, the first of a parabolic trend, or is there a new reality, a new level of usage that sets a new baseline, maybe not where it is right now, somewhere below, but somewhere in between those two? And we'll take a look at that and take the opinion of some of the supposedly best minds on Wall Street coming up right after this. You're listening to The Henry Raines Show.